Okay, we can't bring the committee to order, officially to order, but we're going to get started anyway. When we get a quorum, we'll gavel in and bring it to official or opening of the environment or Minnesota House Mining Outdoor Recreation and Policy Committee. With that, we're going to bring up the Minnesota DNR. We're going to have a hearing today about deer population in the state of Minnesota. If Mr. Thielander would come forward, we'll get started. We have a number of folks that are going to want to speak today. It's going to be the Minnesota Bow Hunters Association, Minnesota Whitetail Alliance, Bluffalo Whitetails, and the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association after we hear from the DNR. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Chairman Hackbarth and members of the committee, my name is Paul Thielander. I'm the Wildlife Section Chief for Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I have with me Steve Merchant, our Populations and Regulations Manager from the Section of Wildlife as well.
Very good. Please proceed with your presentation.
Okay, thank you. So first off, we're gonna give a presentation on deer population management in Minnesota. We've got a PowerPoint here, and I'll do the first series of slides, and then Steve will finish up. So the first graph, if you can look at the screens, there displays the Minnesota deer harvest from 1918 through 2014. So you can see on the graph that in the early 1900s, following the logging era, deer populations went on a pretty steady increase over time. You see a couple of close seasons in 1950 and 1971, when numbers were quite low or very low and the seasons were closed. But then following that, populations continued to increase until we hit peak populations in 2003. And then we went through a public goal setting process in the mid-2000s, and we brought deer numbers down to the newly established goals, which you can see as the population declined. And then last year, we held a number of listening sessions and heard loud and clear that people thought we had too few deer, so we had a very conservative season as a result to reduce harvest. So in 2014, we had a harvest of about 139,500 animals, which was similar to the situation we had in the mid-90s following two severe winters there. Following the 2013 deer season, this article called The Disgruntled Deer Hunter occurred in the Deer and Deer Hunter magazine in March of 2014 and kind of collectively stated the unhappiness of deer hunters across North America with lower deer populations. Prior to that time, there were peak populations in the early to mid-2000s. Hunters were very satisfied. They liked the high harvests that were experienced in those years. But those seasons were, or those population levels were viewed as unsustainable by many wildlife agencies. So deer numbers are lower today, but there is some good news out there. So I want to talk a little bit about disease in deer. So this first slide talks about chronic wasting disease. And in Minnesota, there have been a number of captive cervid farms or deer farms that, or elk farms that had CWD. Those have all been depopulated. We did sampling for CWD in wild deer. We only found one positive deer that was in southeast Minnesota, but we've seen nothing since then, so we think we're doing well so far with CWD. If you look at the surrounding states like Wisconsin, Iowa, and the Dakotas, they're not nearly as well off. They've got CWD in wild deer, and they're working to try to manage that disease at the moment. If you look at the next slide, this is about epizootic hemorrhagic disease. This is a disease that's a viral disease that's transmitted by a bite from a midge, a small insect. And we've not seen it in Minnesota in wild deer. We did have two cases in cattle in Minnesota, one in Brown County in 2012, one in Murray County in 2013, but nothing in wild deer. Or if you look at the Dakotas, both North and South Dakota, they've had a significant occurrence of EHD and significant deer losses related to that. And then our deer habitat situation is good in Minnesota. Following the constitutional amendment passage in 2008, we've received legacy funding for forest and grassland management and acquisition. This has meant more public land open to hunting. Timber harvest, especially on state and county lands, remains strong. Nearly 3 million cords of wood have been harvested annually. That equates to about 150,000 acres of early successional habitat created annually. So things look pretty good on the deer habitat scene. And then this slide shows Minnesota Firearms deer license sales. again, back from the early 1900s through the present. And you can see there in the 2014 year, inside the yellow box, there was a slight decline with the two severe winters in a row we recently had, and then the conservative season. But it was similar to what we saw in the late or mid-90s following those two severe winters. But overall, deer license sales look good in Minnesota. And at this point, I'm going to transfer over to Steve, and he's going to talk a little bit more in detail about deer harvest management. Steve?
Okay, and before we do that, I'm going to call the meeting officially to order. We do have a quorum now. And Representative Anderson, you've had a chance to review the minutes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Thank you and welcome to the committee. And please, for the record, just state your name and who you represent.
Chairman Hackbart, the committee members, my name is Steve Merchant. I'm the Wildlife Population and Regulation Manager for the department.
Welcome. Please proceed.
Hey, I'd like to take a little bit closer look at some of this information that Paul touched on. Starting with our Minnesota deer harvest since 1918 to the present, and as you can see there, we've certainly had a precipitous decline in deer harvest since 2003. I've highlighted there the last 2 years, which are indicative of the severe winters that we saw in 2013 and 14. As you can see here, our peak populations did occur in 2003, and certainly starting at that point in time, the department did have a goal-setting process, which resulted in a desire to lower deer populations, so we implemented some strategies to do that. And we were effective in lowering that deer population. Certainly, what we heard last winter at our deer listening sessions that harvest levels like we've witnessed this last year are unacceptable. It is interesting to note, however, that those harvest levels from a historic point of view are actually quite high. But we certainly understand that they are not high enough. We also know when we harvest about 200,000 deer annually, hunter satisfaction seems to be relatively good. And we did have a relatively, from a historic point of view, short period of time, but from a public perception point of view, a relatively long time of having harvests in that 200,000 area. It's also important to look at where we are today and compare it to where we were in 1996 and 97. A lot of people are concerned about the deer population, and we hear people say that they're concerned about deer hunting and whether or not it'll ever be the same again. But I would like to assure the committee that, you know, we've been in this situation before, and when we get back-to-back severe winters in Minnesota, it has an inevitable depressing effect on the deer population. There's quite frankly really nothing that we can do about that. But the good news there is that we do have harvest strategies that we employ. We get very conservative and we can grow that population again. And I'm confident that that's where we are today as well. This is just another way to look at that same data. The bar on the far right is the average harvest for the last 5 years. That's kind of what I like to say the period of the disgruntled hunter harvest, but it's still averaged about 170,000 deer. Not as good as the 1990s, but much, much better than any other time period prior to that. So we certainly acknowledge that there's likely room to grow from that. However, some hunters that are wishing to achieve those kind of harvest rates like we saw in the 2000 through 2009 period, particularly prior to our goal setting where we saw harvests of 290,000 deer that there are some issues with trying to sustain a harvest like that. In our opinion, those kind of harvest rates simply are not sustainable in Minnesota. Again, taking a look at harvest data, our best indication of what Minnesota's deer population is doing is by looking at the annual buck harvest. And what you see there are those red bars over time from 2000 to 2014. And that's our annual buck harvest. And that, as you can see, has really been relatively flat over that period of time. At our peak in 2003, we harvested about 120,000 bucks. This last season, we're down about, in total, about 33% following those two winters. If you just look at 2012, prior to the very difficult winters, we were down about 19%. And again, starting in 2003, the direction that we were given was to manage for lower deer populations. So looking at that buck harvest, which is the best trend data that we have, certainly the deer population is declined. It's declined 33%, but it hasn't declined catastrophically as some might perceive it. I'd also like you to take a look at those gold-colored bars or the antlerless deer harvest, and those are the amount of antlerless deer that people are, take. You can see back in the mid-2000s, we were very aggressively harvesting deer, purposely aggressively harvesting deer. We had implemented some management permits and intensive harvest permits as we were trying to lower that deer population. And you, if you look, if you will, relative to the buck harvest, we still weren't really moving that buck harvest, which again is an indicator of what the true deer population is. That's not really moving down a lot, even though we're really harvesting a lot of antlerless deer. We finally did start to see a little bit of downward movement in that buck harvest beginning in 2006 or 2009. So those aggressive harvest strategies were in fact getting us into the goal ranges which we were being held accountable to achieve. I wanted to point out with my little bracket there, last year's antlerless deer harvest was extremely small. Look at that relative to the antlerless deer harvest, which we saw in the early 2000s. That's an indication of just how conservative last year's harvest was. And another way to look at that is the sort of that difference between the size of that versus some of those other years. Those are kind of the number of deer that were actually saved, if you will, last year. So the population appears to be poised to recover if, in fact, our new goal-setting process would indicate that our citizens want to see an increase in deer, and it appears that's quite likely the direction that we will be going in. Again, just taking a quick look at the 2014 deer season, my point of this slide is that we did have a very conservative season. Certainly, if you were a zone one deer hunter, it was an extremely disappointing deer season. Our buck harvest was off 22%, indicating a very quite low deer population. And antlerless harvest was off 64% as a result of most of that area. Persons simply couldn't legally take an antlerless deer. Again, in an effort to conserve those deer to be poised for a deer recovery. If you look at the rest of the state, however, it's quite a different story. In zone two, if you will, buck harvest was only off in total of above 1%. And actually in 300 series in southeastern Minnesota, we actually saw an increase in buck harvest, indicating, in fact, that deer population already is growing down there as a result of the 2012 goal-setting process, where our citizens indicated that they would like to see that population grow a little bit. And finally, I'd like to take a couple of minutes to talk about Minnesota's deer management system. I think you'll be hearing a little bit about this from others today. Minnesota has a solid deer management system. Our system is based on the best scientific information available and the best scientific methodologies, really, that we can afford to buy. We've made significant investments over the years in researching white-tailed deer and its role in the environment and its relationship with wolves and other predators. So we know what these effects are, and we use them. We use that knowledge to help us manage deer. We also invest very significantly in the social science end of things. We use survey methodology so that we can determine what public opinion is regarding deer and deer hunting and deer regulations. And again, that's very important information that we used to manage deer in the state. But probably our best piece of information that we have by far, again, is our harvest data. Here in Minnesota, it's mandatory that you register your deer. We make it very easy for people to register their deer. They can register it, they can bring it in, or they can register over the internet or by phone. So we're very confident that we have consistent harvest data from year to year. And looking at those harvest trends really gives us the best knowledge that we have of what our deer population is doing. In addition to the harvest data, we also invest in other monitoring techniques. We do use aerial surveys in parts of the state to count deer. We also use, in extreme western Minnesota, we use techniques, ground-based counts of deer, to help us estimate deer populations. I think you will hear quite a bit about our deer model. There seems to be a significant amount of focus on our deer model. I want you to know that our deer model is really just one small piece of our deer management system. And our deer model gives us information that helps us make decisions. The model itself makes no decisions. And it's also important to note that our deer model, we use our deer model to be able to predict what our harvest will be. So in order to have a certain amount, certain level of harvest, you have to have a certain number of deer on the ground. And our model helps us see whether or not those things line up. And we don't run a model for the entire state. Our model doesn't give us a statewide deer population estimate. That number really is important to some members of the media, and the public likes to know what that number is. But it's frankly, it's irrelevant to our deer management system. We manage on 126 individual deer permit areas, and that model is run in each of those individual 126 deer management permits to help us see whether or not, and we use that data to look at trends as opposed to individual yearly differences to help us manage the deer population so that we can be held accountable to the goals that were established through a public process. And I think that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Merchant. A couple of questions that I have. I heard just briefly a mention of severe winters. I heard just briefly a mention of wolves being part of the problem and severe winter being part of the problem. And I think I heard just briefly about an excess amount of bonus tags being given out previously. But, and I think I heard some justification, or the DNR trying to justify why we're at where we're at. but there's not enough deer in the northern part of the state of Minnesota. There's a lot of deer down in southeastern Minnesota, and your graphs and your tables show that. But the one graph that you have, 2014 deer season, and it shows in zone 100 that antlerless harvest is way down, buck harvest is down. I understand that the population is increasing in southeastern Minnesota, and that might give you a little bit of a skewed graph here where you're talking about buck harvest, etc. But, and I think everybody knows where we were, because we're the deer hunters out there understand. They go year after year. They know that how many deer they see year after year. Now we're not seeing the deer. And what is the problem? And that's why we're here today, and we're asking you, what is the problem? I know that you said that it can be recovered. We can get the populations back up again, and that's a good thing. And I know that that is possible. But how did we get to the position we're at now? Did we give out too many bonus tags for too long of a period of time? Is that part of the problem? Did we not calculate severe weather enough in our projections on what should be done in the future? How did we get to the shape that we're in now? Because despite what some of the things I may have heard you say, that maybe things aren't quite so bad, and but that's not the case. Things are bad. In northern Minnesota, there's no deer to hunt. And that means license sales are going to go down. That's not a good thing. So how did we get here? There's not enough deer in the northern part of the state of Minnesota. What's happening? How is this winter looking? The severe winters that we had, was it a food issue? Was not enough food? Was there too many wolves that they were taking deer? Coyotes that are after the deer, after the fawns in the springtime? We didn't hear enough of that kind of information from the DNR today, and I would like you to comment on those issues.
Mr. Merchant?
Sure. Chairman Eckbarth, committee members. The northern part of Minnesota, certainly what I intended to demonstrate there is the outcome of the 2005 through 2007 goal setting process was to reduce deer populations, particularly in the northern forest. And one of the main drivers behind that at that time was that the state was going through a forest certification system to try to become third-party certified in order to expand markets for our timber industry. And we had a corrective action request that, and if I could, I will read that to you, trying to give you some context here of why deer populations in the northern forest were lowered. If I may, DNR must demonstrate how the current efforts to set deer population levels will ensure that deer population targets goals are consistent with ecosystem health goals. We were hearing from county foresters, state foresters, private land foresters, that they were having a difficult time regenerating our forest because of the pressure from deer. And that was certainly an influential piece of why deer populations goals were to lower those populations. And we did develop new tools to allow people to aggressively harvest deer. So we did purposely bring down deer populations from those highs in 2003, and we were bringing those down so that we could achieve those goal levels. What we can't predict, unfortunately, is severe winter, nor can we really mitigate against severe winter in that winter itself. We had two very severe winters in 2013 and 2014, the last two previous winters. Those did do big-time numbers on deer. And certainly wolves are a piece of that, Deer are more vulnerable during times of very deep snow to wolf predation. So those two factors are why we are where we are today.
And Mr. Merchant, tell me a little bit more about going forward. Where do we want to get, and how are we going to get there? We've got to start selling some more licenses for deer hunters, get more people involved. Off the record, not off the record, but fishing. We've got to get more people involved in fishing and sell more fishing licenses. I want to sell more deer hunting licenses. What are we going to do about getting the pop? Explain a little bit more about how we get the population of deer up.
We currently are going through a revision of our deer population goals through a very public process. We have five teams throughout the state right now, citizen teams who are grappling with that of what should the deer population goals be. And again, each of one of these individual 128 deer permit areas. And when they reach a consensus of that, hopefully they'll reach a consensus on what that population should look like. And when they do, they'll make a recommendation to the department, and the department will accept that or modify that. Certainly 9 times out of 10, or probably more like 49 times out of 50, we accept that team's recommendation if they reach a consensus on it. So we take that seriously, and that's kind of what we're held accountable to. So that's what the goal is. So I think you're right that the teams will want to see a increase in the deer population in Minnesota, including the northern forest. But whatever number they come up with, we will use our deer management system to achieve that goal. And what the tool that we will use is the tool that we used this last deer hunting season, and is have a very conservative deer harvest. We harvested essentially no antlerless deer last year in the northern forest. And that puts us in a position, once we do get a break in the winter weather, which we are getting this year, that those does will be productive this spring, and we will see a recovery of that population, just like we did in 96 and 97.
And Mr. Merchant, I thank you for that, and I appreciate that, and that's a good goal to have. But I have to tell you, even if you had given out all those more permits than you did, which is very conservative, and that was all good, and that was a good thing, I think, to get more conservative. But there weren't even any does to shoot. There were no does to shoot. I mean, did we fulfill every one of those deer permit, doe permit tags? Were every one of those permits filled? I don't think so. I mean, I stood in a stand for 5 days, and I didn't see a doe in the woods. And I hunt in an area where you see a lot of deer normally. I mean, 10 years ago, I could take my pick on which doe I wanted to shoot or which buck I wanted to shoot, and now there's no deer. So we've got a huge problem, and it needs to be addressed. And if it's being conservative on the bucks only and the limited number of antlerless permits, that's probably a good thing. But we have to get the doe population or the deer population back up. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Merchant. I want to start out by saying that I'm a deer hunter, and I've hunted for 49 consecutive years since I started deer hunting, as a firearm hunter and also as an archer. I'm looking at, I think, your slide 8, which has the deer harvest 1918 to 2014. And my deer hunting career probably started in the middle of that data. And I see some observations, and you know, I want to comment on what I'm seeing with the data here and then maybe ask you a question related to it. Leading up to 1969 and whatnot, there our general practice was you could buy a license over the counter. There weren't permit areas, and you could shoot either sex. That was kind of the way it was. And then we also had some very heavy winters, heavy snow. I know that because I've worked outside in the elements most of my professional career. And so I'm pretty in tune with the weather. And the deer herd had collapsed to the point where we had no deer hunting at all in the early 70s, and that's why we see zero for a harvest that one year that we shut it down. Eventually, a new model was adopted, and we started to build the herd back up with a bucks-only program, and you can see that the population started to increase in the late 70s and continued on a pretty impressive trajectory all the way up to the early 90s. When I see those two boxes that are enclosed on that graph, there's a couple of things that come to my attention. I also remember the late 90s as being very heavy snow years in which snowmobiling was fantastic. And the heavy snow year ended right at the millennium. 1999 was the last big snow year. And that happens to be the end or in the center of that box when it appears that population started to recover. I would also point out that right at that same time, there was a pretty massive CRP enrollment program. I hunt deer in three areas. I hunt deer locally in the metro here in western Hennepin County. I hunt deer in Ottertail County, in which I own farmland on the edge of the coniferous forest. And I also occasionally hunt where my cabin is in Hubbard County, which is much more of a woodland setting than the transitional areas of agriculture. But during the end of that heavy snow year and a rapid enrollment program of CRP, I see the populations climb to record highs and harvest rates climb to record highs to 250. Most of those CRP enrollments were 10 and 15 year contracts. And I see a significant decline in the population where farm rents, I chose to take our land out of CRP or portions of it because the program wasn't keeping up with the rents nor the taxes, so I opted out, and I see during that period a decline, and then it also seemed to be exacerbated by, again, the return of some snow and snow winters. So, you know, I guess my question would be, are my casual observations consistent with your analysis in terms of habitat and snow related to the population that you see those two boxes that you have enclosed there?
Mr. Merchant.
Chairman Hackmark, Representative, your observations are very astute. I think you have a very good understanding of what this graph is depicting.
Representative Hurtoff?
Well, thank you. And I share what Representative Hackbarth, Chair Hackbarth, has said. This last December, I decided for the lack of snow cover up north to maybe try one last weekend on New Year's Eve to do some grouse hunting. But I know it's pretty tough to go grouse hunting if the forest is whited by snow. And wouldn't you know, on my way up there, it started snowing, and we were blessed with 2 inches of snow. But the next morning I went out and decided it was futile to try and hunt grouse, but I got in my pickup, and in the Paul Bunyan State Forest, there's a myriad or network of forest roads as well as logging roads. And I took a rather long trek from Highway 64 going west through the Paul Bunyan all the way to Park Rapids, basically using forest roads and logging roads on fresh snow. And I concur with what the chair said. I saw in about 31 miles of driving in the woods, I saw a single deer track crossing any of the roads that I was cutting a new trail through a few inches. So I have a concern about that population in the woods, or whether or not they were still bed down and just not moving in the morning. But usually they're nocturnal, and the snow was overnight, so I expected to see a fair amount of deer tracks, and I never saw that. So I would have a concern for that. With regard to the other areas I hunt, I haven't seen much change in population overall. at home here in Hennepin County. The decrease I've seen is partly because of the fact the last two springs in a row I've been locked out of planting a crop, so I had no agriculture on the land, and I've been fallowing the land, so the habitat's a little different, but I'm still, even as of yesterday, I had six deer in the backyard. And and as far as out in Otter Tail County, I see the pressure there, but I also do recall in the last couple of years, we've had some, maybe with the exception of this one, but we had right around 2010, 11, 12, we had like two or three years in a row that the opener was absolutely miserable in terms of high wind and the trees swaying, and that the conditions just really not where an animal would be moving around and taking cover. But if you are a deer hunter, you know that once the shooting starts, the population, the game is on. It's like being an archer and making the mistake of slamming your door as you're heading into the woods. I mean, once the game is on, the behavior changes, and I'm not, at my age now, I'm not one of the guys to go flogging through the cattail sloughs to go looking for a deer. So so there, I saw less, but not of great concern. We still harvested deer, but for our own crew, I cut it off, and I said, being I'm the landowner, I said, no more doe harvesting. I cut that off 2 years ago. I said, I want to build the population back up. So I self-imposed a buck only, even though we have a either-or where option where we are. I did that on my own, and some of my neighbors have done it, and we're starting to see some recovery there. So I always figure if you've got does around, you've got bucks, and that's kind of what we're hunting for. So that's the end of my comments and questions.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peddle and Mr. Burchin, I want to thank you for this information you brought forward. Unfortunately, I think there's some information that is missing. In northern Minnesota, deer hunting is a great boost to that economy. There's a lot of people that used to, and I'm going to use that word again, used to go up north deer hunting. They're not anymore. There's no deer. In my area, there's a lot, I hunt in zone two, there's a lot more hunting pressure. And I'm surprised to see that the numbers, with the increased hunting pressure in zone two, that the numbers are actually down. What even concerns me more is the for licenses sold up in zone one, it's down 22%. But what I'm not seeing in these numbers, which we, myself and I think other members of the committee would like to see, is the number of licenses over the last 10 years by zone. Because if we have 33% less hunters up in zone one, and we still have a 22% reduction, we have a bigger problem than just 22% reduction in deer population. And if we have a 20% increase in hunters in zone two, and we have a reduction in deer population, we have a problem. Now, I've talked to a number of people that that used to hunt up north. They quit. They're hunting around here. They go out in the woods. They don't even see a track. Now, I was been fortunate where I hunt that we've had a lot of success, and my hunting party and the hunting parties around me, we're good stewards of the hunting and the deer population. We have areas we believe there's short of deer. We restrict the type of deer that we can get. But I guess the information that I would like to see is a breakdown. It doesn't have to be by each specific zone, but for zone one or zone two or zone three, the amount of license over the past few years, whether it's increased or decreased with the harvest, to compare that, that'll give us better information than just a statewide. Because it's one thing to have the numbers of deer harvest, but how many hunters are out there looking for the deer? Thank you.
Other questions, Representative Constantine?
This isn't actually a question. In what seems to be pointed to as the golden years, 2002 and 2003, I was on the city council in Mankato, And during those years, we had a tenfold increase inside the city limits of deer and car crashes. There is some drawbacks to having a lot of extra deer. So I guess I would be a little reluctant to try to go back to that when we're starting endangering people's lives on the road.
Mr. Merchant and the connection between Wisconsin and Michigan, Minnesota, seems to be that you know, we all had severe winters about the same time, but there's still a lot of deer being taken in over the same period of time in Wisconsin and Michigan, and there seems to be a lot more licenses sold there, and the success rate is high in Wisconsin and Michigan as well, even though we have some similar issues with those states. So when you talk about those things in that context, it brings even greater concern about why is the deer population so low in the state of Minnesota. Do you have any comments as far as, I know that the state of Wisconsin, even though they have high success rates in taking deer the last few years, the population is low, and they have concerns about the low deer population. They took some action over there. They've got a, I think they hired a private organization to come in and do a survey, and I think there's some folks in Minnesota that want some kind of a survey done here as well. And then they also put together a plan to try to increase the population, and I think the state actually put some money into that. Do we need to go in that direction? Is that the direction we need to go to get more deer in northern Minnesota? Or maybe you can comment on why there's such a, even though there's population problems in Wisconsin and Michigan, why is the success rate there so much better than it is here? All of those things. Can you comment on any of those things? Yeah.
Chairman Hackbarth, I'm more familiar with the Wisconsin situation than I am with Michigan. I can tell you that the Wisconsin deer harvest this last fall was the lowest harvest that they had had in 30-some-odd years. So they are in a very similar situation to what we are, and for some of the same reasons. And in Wisconsin, they also have citizen-based teams that are making recommendations to the department on what their deer population goals should be. We have the same the same process. It's just slightly different. They do it at a county scale, and they have an individual teams for each of their counties. We have teams that make have those discussions and make those decisions based on a block of approximately, I'm just going to say off the top of my head here, 10 deer permit areas. One thing that Wisconsin did, and they recognized the difficulty of communicating the complexities of the science involving being able to predict how many deer are on the landscape. And what they've asked their teams to do is to simply decide whether or not they want the population in their area of influence to either go up, stay the same, or go down. So they no longer concern themselves, if you will, with trying to actually come up with deer numbers or goals or numeric goals. They strictly go on a we want more, we want less, we want the same. So I think certainly, so that's what I know about the Wisconsin system.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on the relationship between the wolf population and the deer population. It actually would spill over to the moose population. I'm aware that we've got some very precise data that goes back many years on wolves, where they've been taken, for what reason. And obviously a huge amount of data on deer, at least from the hunting standpoint, and to some extent also on a car accident standpoint. I'm not sure about the moose, but do we have somebody that's looking at all of these? And again, this is a, you know, just a long distance observation, but it's appeared at times that we have stovepipes within the animal biologist world. I'm kind of a moose guy, and I'm kind of a deer guy, and similar, but not the same. And then you throw the carnivore guy, who's a brand new guy now, at least compared to the deer management. But are we looking at that data and mining it to see if there are any subtle relationships between the populations, particularly when we get down to these small areas, because we can pinpoint literally every place we've taken a wolf for what reason. You get down to any one of these, and particularly in the northern part of the state, because you don't have that influence in the southern part of the state. So are we really looking at that, and do we have an understanding of the relationships there?
Chairman Hashmarsh, Representative Lewick, we certainly have looked at that. The relationships between predators and prey are well studied throughout the world. They're very complex relationships. But generally speaking, we in the 1990s, maybe even in the late 80s, we invested in about a 15-year long-term study of deer survival in northern Minnesota, where there were wolves. And much of that information that we learned during the 90s, when certainly there were significant numbers of wolves in Minnesota, that information we used directly in our deer management system to make some of those predictive, to be able to predict that harvest. So certainly we are looking at that. And also in Minnesota, there have been long-term deer-wolf relationship studies done in Northeastern by David Meach and his colleagues with the USGS as well. So I think we certainly are cognizant of that relationship between wolves and deer, and that there certainly is that relationship. Absolutely.
President Luke?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd like to follow up with, well, there's a current situation where you obviously have no authority over the wolf population. Does that complicate the future management perspective for the deer population and the moose population? We basically jerked that leg of the stool out from federal activity.
Mr. Merchant.
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative Lewick. We in Minnesota never used the brief 3 years that we were allowed to harvest wolves in modern time. That wolf season was never designed to control, if you will, the wolf population. It was a very conservative season, simply designed to give people an opportunity to support harvest wolves. We didn't use it as a tool to lower the deer population. Nor are the wolves that are taken in the depredation program really designed at any kind of larger scale to effectively lower wolf numbers. They simply are to alleviate a issue that's occurring at a very specific geographical location. So we really never sort of faced that issue, if you will. That was certainly something that was brewing. And there was interest in revising our wolf management plan. And one of the key issues that face the state of Minnesota is whether or not wolves should be managed for those purposes that you mentioned. But again, our season never was designed to do that. So has that, certainly that tool has been taken away from us, but we never had gotten to the point where we were applying that tool.
Thank you. Members, we've got a number of different folks that we want to get to yet today, and we've got less than an hour left of the committee. Representative Lewick.
Just a quick follow-up. I agree. We really don't have enough data based on the Hunter wolf harvest yet to be really useful. I will say this: the depredation business taking wolves that is in the interest of keeping the cattle population up in the state of Minnesota, and so that is a very important element. But it seems like we've lost a piece of both data gathering that we could compile, and probably more specific to the issues with wolf versus moose than it is deer, because of the scarcity of moose situation right now.
Thank you, Mr. Merchant, for coming in and giving us your presentation. Good job. Thank you, Chief. Thanks for coming in. Thank you very much. Next up, we have the Minnesota Bull Hunters Incorporated. Brooks Johnson.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry.
I thought I was on the list for questions.
Oh, I didn't have you down. Did you have something for the DNR?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mr. Thielander, Chief Thielander, could you come back up? I'm sorry. I didn't have Representative Urusso on my list. Representative Urusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a couple of times the need to determine what the sustainable population is, and I understand the need, but we didn't hear anything about what factors you take into account. Now, there's some obvious ones about, you know, habitat and food and reproduction and predation and all that, but to what extent does the idea of sustainable take into account human interactions like car deer accidents and crop damage, and in my area it's more of a landscape damage?
Mr. Merchant or Chief Thielander, who wants to take that? Mr. Merchant?
Chairman Hackbarth, representative. Sustainability, you know, I had a definition of it written down when I was up here, and I left it in my chair up there because I figured this question might come up. But certainly sustainability does take into account those issues that you mentioned. But maybe more importantly than the sustainability piece is we need to manage deer populations that are socially acceptable to everyone in Minnesota. And that's one of the challenges of what we do, is because there is a divergent point of view on that. So we try to reach a consensus position where we can get as many people to agree of what that population could be. So some people have to give and take a little bit, and so we come up with a population level that is acceptable. That's what we tend to call in this business the social carrying capacity. But yes, those factors certainly do come into play, and they are the reason, or those are the factors that our teams, which are trying to come up with these consensus-based recommendations on what the deer population goals should be, those are the issues that cause those teams to have to, you know, do some hard work to try to reach a consensus on to find a point that that all of them don't necessarily agree with at the starting point.
Representative Urusso.
Thank you. We saw only the year-on-year changes for the different zones. We haven't. Do you have population estimates for each of the zones?
Merchant.
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative. We do not have a. Again, we come up with a. Our model comes up with a density range in each of one of those 126 deer permit areas. I'm not prepared to, again, the model does not give a prediction of what the statewide or even the zone-wide population is. So I don't have that for you today. And again, we just manage, again, at that individual permit area basis, and instead of having a single population estimate. We have an estimate of a range of densities.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would have been extremely useful to see because it's very difficult to judge these changes without seeing that. I mean, if you have a population that's just teeming in the woods, having this kind of reduction would be one thing, but if it's much sparser than that, then it's quite a different thing. But if you have a range of densities, it's a pretty easy thing to figure out what the areas are in these zones. A little bit of simple math gives you a range of what the total population is in each of those zones. But actually, I would be more interested in that density, and I think we should have seen that in order to have some context for these numbers. I was really happy that Representative Hertzhaus brought up the topic of conservation programs helping the habitat, because we need to keep that in mind for not just the deer population, but the grouse and the ducks and everything else when we talk about buffer strips. Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Representative Russo.
Thank you. Is there any concern that the deer in the northeast might be suffering some kind of demise like the moose?
Mr. Merchant.
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative. We do not think that that is an issue with white-tailed deer. We think where we are, and again, I want to be very clear that the deer population in northern Minnesota is down, and it is down significantly from the peak times of 2003. That's unequivocal. That is the case. But we think that we understand the reasons behind why that deer population is down, and again, it's because of aggressive harvest to lower that population, coupled with back-to-back very severe winters. We have a good understanding of what severe winters do to deer in northern Minnesota, and severe winters result and very significant losses to deer, and then subsequent loss of productivity the following years from the does that do survive.
Representative Russo, anything else?
Just a follow-up comment. I really would like to see more of the absolute numbers that you've got to base this on, not just the change in the harvest, and particularly broken down zone by zone. We heard that comment also from Representative Johnson. It's very hard to put these numbers into context without being able to look at that. So, thank you.
Mr. Merchant.
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative. I don't want to give you the illusion that we can give you precise population numbers for deer. We don't have those. We estimate deer, and our level of precision is such that I don't want to give the impression that there is a precise population estimate.
Representative Russell.
Thank you. There's a way we deal with that. We put those precision estimates on it. So if you've got an estimate that's plus or minus 50%, you put that as plus or minus 50%. But you have the estimates, and we have not seen them. And this is an informational hearing, and so we need to get the information. We cannot judge, the validity of what you're telling us or the wisdom of what you're telling us without as much context as we can get for it. And there are some of us here that are capable of understanding when you say you've got an estimate and that you've got large uncertainty regions around that. And I, for one, am one of those people. I have taught that for 10 years at the University of Minnesota. So I'd like to see those numbers. Thank you.
Mr. Merchant, do you have any idea or projection on how things are going to progress in the next few years of trying to bring back the population? What are you projecting, or haven't you figured that far out? We're trying to bring populations up right now, I hope. So what's our projection? Where do we want to be next year, the year after that, the year after that? What's our projection on where are we going to be in the next few years?
Chairman Hackbarth, the answer to those questions right now lie in the hands of those teams who are meeting as we speak to determine what those deer population goals are going to be. And once that is determined, we will use our deer management system to get us into that goal as soon as we can. If you're asking me to make a prediction on what those teams are going to come up with, I have no doubt in my mind that the teams in areas where deer populations are suppressed right now due to the two back-to-back winters, if people want to see more deer on the landscape, and they will come with a recommendation to see more deer on the landscape.
Well, Mr. Merchant, and I think you're right about that. They're going to want to see more deer, and what I'm asking you is the way we're managing the herd right now, and we're managing it conservatively, we're going to have bucks only, and we're going to have only so many permits for antlerless deer. What is our projection for bringing up the population? I mean, do we see the year 2020 having a higher population? I'm just asking, what do we see? What's in the future? Mr. Merchant or Mr. Chief Thielander, did you want to take that?
Representative Hackbarth or Chairman Hackbarth, I would like to bring your attention to the two severe winters we had back-to-back in the 90s, 95, 96, 96, 97, where we had a very sharp decline in numbers due to severe winter weather. We went in a very conservative season framework following those two winters. Within 3 years, we were back to pre-severe winter deer density. So given cooperation with winter weather, we can bring populations back quite rapidly. In that case, it was about 3 years.
That's all I wanted to hear. Thank you very much. Thank you again for your presentations. Brooks, you can come up now. Brooks Johnson with the Minnesota Bull Hunters.
Thank you, Chair Hackbarth. Committee members, thanks for letting me testify today. I got a pack of deer. It's called paper deer that I'm going to go through.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record in the microphone.
Sure. Brooks Johnson with the Minnesota Bow Hunters. I'm the president.
Please proceed. Members, we've got four different groups that are going to speak now, and we're going to give them each about 10 minutes, and that will work out just about right before we have to adjourn at 4:30. Please proceed.
Super, thank you. The PowerPoint presentation is called Paper Deer, and I'm going to talk about something I term the magic eraser and how it's eroded the deer hunting experience in Minnesota. Talk a little bit about the DNR model. DNR uses a model to estimate the herd size. Models rely on legitimate inputs for accuracy. Instead of seeking additional legitimate inputs, our DNR is taken to modifying baseline model data to lower the herd further than was publicly announced. Accountability is eliminated when numbers are allowed to be constantly modified. You won't need a degree in wildlife biology or population modeling to understand what I'm going to go through here. In 2005 to 2007, we underwent statewide a similar stakeholder process that we're going through right now, and the outcome, when you add the numbers up, was a 9% herd reduction, 9% statewide. DNR provided the information to QDMA for their 2015 whitetail report that shows the deer herd had been reduced 9%. This is 2003 to 2013. 2003, model said we had 1.1 million deer. 2013, approximately 1 million deer. 2014, the DNR stated we had 1 million deer. That's a 9% reduction. That's what was scheduled from those meetings. As Mr. Merchant talked about, the harvest input, buck harvest and primary is the number one indicator of the deer herd in the state of Minnesota. If buck harvest goes up, the herd's rising. If buck harvest falls, the herd is shrinking. Unlike Mr. Merchant said, when I do the math, I get the buck harvest down 42% in the past 10 years. Scheduled reduction was 9% to the herd. The buck harvest is down 42% in the past 10 years statewide. Another measure of the size of the deer herd is hunter satisfaction. The hunters of most of Minnesota haven't been surveyed as to satisfaction levels for 10 years. If you go back to the 2,500 hunter satisfaction surveys, 60+% of the hunters in Minnesota were satisfied with the number of deer that were in the woods. The surveys that just came out, the satisfaction numbers go anywhere from as low as 11 up to about 38% statewide average for the areas undergoing the stakeholder process this year. It's probably in the mid-20s. So we've seen hunter satisfaction with deer in the woods go from 60+% to 20-some percent in the past 10 years. So I'm going to ask you guys to do a little math for me. The DNR model says the herd is down 9%. The primary indicator of the size of the deer herd in Minnesota is down 42%. Steve Merchant said that. That's the number one number they use. Hunter satisfaction has dropped from 60% to 20%. And there are a number of other indices we can use to try to measure whether the herd is growing or shrinking by how much. You can argue the legitimacy of any of them one at a time, but when you put them all together, every data set disagrees with the DNR's model on how far the deer herd has shrunk. So how does that happen? How does the model say the herd's down 9% and everything else is closer, pointing closer to a 40 to 50% decline in the deer herd in the past 10 years? This is what I call data manipulation or the magic eraser, and these are going to be some pretty strong assertions as to how the DNR has done this. Baseline manipulation, the magic eraser, is what I claim is used to change numbers that don't match the DNR's deer model. Constant manipulation of baseline data renders our current goal-setting process meaningless, and it's all about paper deer. Here's one example I pulled up from a forum, and it's probably kind of hard to see, but Sam Cook up in the Duluth newspaper put a graph up for permit area 178. And in 2007, you can see the deer herd was estimated at about 26 deer per square mile pre-fawn. The chart below shows a modified DNR data graph where they went back in time and changed the numbers. 2007, they got 17 deer per square mile. And this happened all across the state. This is just one example. Here's some areas my stakeholder team is going to cover for the process. I don't have my reading glasses on. But if you go down to the very bottom, look at zone 183. In 2006, zone 183, thank you. In 2006, zone 183 was scheduled for a 10% decrease to the deer herd. They told the stakeholders at that meeting they had 25 deer per square mile in zone 183. Later on, at some point in time, they changed that 25 to a 13. They continued that 10% schedule decrease, which now has brought the herd down to 12 animals, where they claim they're at goal. And again, this is more prevalent in the northern zones that you're talking about, where the deer have disappeared. This baseline data manipulation has happened like crazy. Probably a 30% reduction to what they originally claimed the herd was up there. So when you apply increases or decreases to a smaller deer herd, you're always going to have less deer. So extrapolated, in 2005, the DNR model estimated we had 850,000 deer pre-fawn in the state of Minnesota. Along about 2008, they changed that number to 660,000 pre-fawn deer in the state of Minnesota. That's about a 25% decrease that we started working off of, but we still did the percentage increases and decreases to that new, now lower number. Minnesota has undergone the third largest deer harvest decline nationwide in the past decade. And that is not thanks to the disease that the other two states had lower their herds. So third largest harvest decline, most of the indicators I dig up point to herd reductions 3 to 5 times greater than what was scheduled. The issue is not specific to Minnesota. I'm going to assert the Minnesota DNR made a conscious decision to lower the deer herd. They use the model as a tool to hide that hidden agenda. And the way they did it was manipulating baseline data, which allows the DNR to shrink the herd while claiming they're still sticking to agreed-to goals set from the goal-setting process. Allowing the DNR to constantly alter these numbers destroys all credibility. All the accountability is out the window. If we were to increase the deer herd 50% in the state of Minnesota, we would not get back to the buck harvest we were promised in 2007. And we are not going to get those kind of increases during the stakeholder process. You're going to be looking at 10 to 25% increases. I know I don't have a lot of time, and as you go through this packet, there's a lot of data that supports what I'm saying. But I put a lot of time into this over the course of the past year. I've spent a lot of time speaking with the DNR. I've come to the conclusion they don't plan to bring the deer numbers back. And I'll stand firm in that. The goal-setting process is going to give us nominal gains to a deer herd that was secretly stolen from the hunters of Minnesota. And I feel it's the responsibility of this committee to perform an audit of that model and our DNR deer management And when that's completed, let's put together a state deer management plan that has some written goals, destinations, objectives, so you people know we don't have the questions to ask. Where are we going? What are we doing? We don't have a deer plan in the state of Minnesota. Not every state does. But in light of what's happened in the state to the deer herd in the past 10 years, it's about time we got one. And I can tell you right now, every deer group in the state of Minnesota has been working together to try and find a way to get some kind of sort of plan put together for some long-term change. We don't want to run ourselves ragged going for 1 year and 2 year short-term changes only to see the deer herd decimated again. And I think I'm just going to open it up to questions.
Questions, members?
Yeah.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Johnson, what's your theory behind the reason to intentionally lower the herd? Is it because car collisions or depredation or on farm crops, or what? Why would they intentionally lower? I'm just wondering.
Chair Hackbarth, Representative, I don't like to speculate. I would guess that some of it comes to what the Ms. Merchant alluded to on the certifications of the forests up north. And I think in order to meet those certifications, the number of deer that they would have had to take out of the woods would have been met with such resistance from the hunters of Minnesota that they simply wanted to do it. So they hid behind the model and tried to reduce the deer herd behind the hunters' backs. And I don't think that's right. And that's why I'd like an audit of the numbers. I can find so many discrepancies pointing to that. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know what the factors are that would lead them to want to reduce the deer herd to the level they have. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter to me. I just want to see it fixed in an open and transparent manner.
Well, and Mr. Johnson, I think there might be some legitimacy to what you say about the forestry folks coming forward and having a concern about too many deer. So I think we did hear some testimony from the DNR saying that that's why they had the intensive harvest with the extra bonus tags, etc., in the first place. Representative Constantine.
Actually, I was
going
to ask the same question.
Okay. Representative Van Enzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Frankly, sir, the forestry connection and the clandestine backroom deal that you allege occurred between forestry people and deer management people really kind of freaks me out a little bit. I live in the National Forest. I am very experienced in planting white pine after an area is logged off, and all sorts of measures have been experimented with to prevent those seedlings from being chewed up by the deer, and some work and some don't work. And some years the success rate is high, and some years the success rate is low. But to suggest that it's forestry people who are in the business of sustainably harvesting wood in northern Minnesota, that they're somehow involved in culling the availability of deer for hunters is, I mean, I would really like you to talk to me about that a little bit more. That seems pretty far-fetched. And lastly, most of the forest reforests itself after it's cut. And it reforests itself with aspen, which grow literally like weeds. And those logged-out areas that are reforesting themselves by nature are magnets for deer. I understand that. But the numbers of deer that it would take to decimate a logged out area is unbelievable. So I'm just asking you to be a little careful about some of those assertions.
Any comments, Mr. Johnson?
Chair Hackbarth, Representative, I said I shouldn't speculate. I shouldn't have said anything. There's so many theories and things that fly around because, quite frankly, the hunters of Minnesota don't know why the herd's been taken back so far. And we sit in the back room over a couple beers and we speculate all kinds of ideas that we don't know. how much truth they have to them.
Well, sir, two bad winters, lots of wolves, and over-aggressive harvesting 2, 3, 4 years in a row. Perfect storm, and that's the problem.
And I think, Representative Anzell, that's why we're here. We hope that we're given direction to the DNR to get the herd back up again. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for coming forward.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Minnesota Whitetail Alliance, Mr. Wozniak. I hope I pronounced your name right, and please state your name and who you represent, just for the record.
Ted Wozniak with the Minnesota Whitetail Alliance. And I'm just taking a second to pull my presentation.
That's fine. We're very limited on our amount of time, and we've got a couple more folks that want to come forward.
I'll breeze through this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth and committee members for having me. I'm going to take a little change of direction here. I'm going to talk a little bit about APR. So a little bit about myself. I'm a co-founder of the Minnesota Whitetail Alliance and also a board or a member of active member of Quality Deer Management Association. And I'm speaking for both organizations today. Minnesota Whitetail Alliance is a group of individuals whose sole mission is to protect yearling bucks in Minnesota. Where the QDMA, while their scope is a little bit more broad, it does include protection of yearling bucks. I'm going to tell you a little bit today why I think deer management in Minnesota is like pizza. Hold that thought for now, and I will get back to that in a little bit. So antler point restrictions, just to review, is a restriction that basically restricts the harvest of bucks to a number of points on one side. We have a APR in southeast Minnesota that is actually 4 points. So it has to have 4 points on one side to be a legal buck to shoot, okay? So, and in different areas of the state, it's probably going to be less than that. So going further north than the southeast zone, you're probably looking at maybe a 3-point restriction. APR is typically set to protect 50 to 75% of the yearling bucks. So it's not going to protect them all, but it's based on that area. It looks at what a typical yearling buck might be, and it'll set the APR at that. Currently, 23 states, including Minnesota, Zone 3 in Minnesota, have an APR. So I'm going to go through just a few slides here to kind of allow you to reference, you know, what a yearling buck and so forth might look like. So this first one is a pretty typical yearling buck, and if you look at the one side, there's actually 4 points on that one side. That is a legal buck in southeast Minnesota and likely anywhere an APR would exist in Minnesota. Here's a typical yearling buck, typical four-corn, a little four-pointer. Probably not going to be legal in anywhere an APR exists. This is a typical basket rack yearling buck. A lot of people see these little 4x4s. They call them the basket rack, and they are typically a yearling buck. This is a typical 2.5-year-old buck. So this is a trophy for, and it's probably the buck of a lifetime for many people in Minnesota. And it's not a bad deer. It's a very nice buck. There's a typical 3-year-old buck and a typical 4-year-old buck. Now, to be honest with you, a lot of people who do support APR, this is probably the minimum they would shoot, but this is they don't feel that it's right to impose that type of restriction on people. So that's why we agree to the APR where it protects half of the yearling bucks. This data here is the data from Minnesota, from what I understand, was gathered prior to the state park hunts several years ago. And it's not something Minnesota collects on a regular basis, but when they did collect it, it showed that 67% of the bucks harvested in Minnesota are yearlings. So you can see how that compares with the rest of the state, or with those other states that do collect that data. So you can see we don't do very well. And if you look at the percentage of 3.5-year-old bucks in the deer harvest, we also don't do it very well. We're only at about 10%, and you can see how we compare to the other states. I put together a little bit of a model here on what a buck harvest might look like under without any APR. So you see the yearlings are about 65%. You have about 25% at the 2.5-year-old age range. And refer those pictures on your handouts for reference. And then about 10%, as those graphs showed, are at that 3.5-year-old or better. So without APR, you're going to reduce your yearling harvest to about 35%. 2.5 is going to jump from 25% to 40%. And the 3.5-year-old plus is going to go from 10% to 25%. So you can see the what it does is comparing the two graphs there. Now, as I'm sure most of you know, the language in the 2013 Game and Fish Bill essentially prohibited the DNR from expanding APR to any area outside of Zone 3. So back to why deer management in Minnesota is like pizza. And this happened about 4 or 5 weeks ago. This came to me when me and some people from the office were trying to order pizza, and we were trying to agree on what to order. And some of us want Canadian bacon, some want supreme, some want garbage. Nobody could really decide. We ended up ordering pepperoni. Not one of us wanted pepperoni. We all knew we wanted pizza. We just found something we could all live with. It kind of got me to do a little Google search. I did a Google search on the most common pizza toppings in America, and lo and behold, it was pepperoni. And now I know why we ordered pepperoni. So I want you to think of APR as pepperoni. Next, I understand you have some late night sessions here, and pizza is ordered a lot of times. Next time you order and you have to compromise on a pizza topping, think APR. So the important takeaway here today that I really want you to walk away with is that the APR regulation of either 3 or 4 points on one side really is a compromise between those who would like to see mature bucks at 4 years or better and those who want to shoot every deer they see. Even those who are normally happy with yearling bucks will be ecstatic with a 2-year-old. I put a picture of a 2-year-old there. So APR is the ultimate compromise. APR is pepperoni. I pulled up a few, the last surveys done in Minnesota that asked a question about yearling buck protection. You can see that there's support there. I'm not going to go through that. We would ultimately like to see the language removed, although I understand that may not occur. That's probably not something we're going to get. So we would like to see potentially a revision of the language to have maybe conditions set forth that under these conditions, the DNR would be allowed to expand APR. And in either case, I think it's important to let the DNR know that it's okay to explore APR expansion because when talking to the DNR about APR, it seems like they're hesitant to move forward with as long as this language exists. So, and the last point here, I know it's been addressed, and I wish I had more time, but we do, both QDMA and the Whitetail Alliance, highly support a deer management plan with several goals addressed, including buck age structure. And last slide here, one thing that seems to be, the thinking out there seems to be, we want to take APR statewide. Absolutely not the case. We support APR if 4 conditions are present. The first one is excessive harvest of yearling bucks. I think I showed that has existed. The public support exists. Those surveys, even the most recent population goal setting team surveys show high level dissatisfaction with the number and quality of bucks in the herd. And then the third would be adequate deer densities that should be present to allow everyone sufficient opportunities to harvest a deer. And we know, as the previous speakers here, that doesn't exist. So we don't support APR expansion in the presence of deer densities that are too low. And then the last thing is monitoring needs to be in place to measure success or failure, which is just something you have to do. So if I didn't take up too much time, I'll open to questions.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. Thank you. Questions, members? Thank you very much for your presentation. No questions at this time. Thank you for coming forward with that. Appreciate it. Next up, Bluffland Whitetails, Colin Johnson. Mr. Johnson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, and we're running behind.
I'll go real quick.
My name is Colin Johnson. I represent Bluffton Whitetails Association down the southeast corner of the state.
Thank you for coming in.
Just get my...
Mr. Johnson, we're running out of time. We've all got the handout in our packet. We can follow along.
Chairman Hackworth, members of the committee, thanks for having me. My presentation is going to be a little bit different than everyone else's that you've heard this afternoon. You're going to feel like maybe I'm in the wrong room. Different in the fact that the Bluffton area of Minnesota, on the southeast corner, and I think the second page of your handout has a little diagram of where the Zone 3 area is. It's black and white, but you can see where the shaded area is. Our population down there is healthy. We're harvesting some of the most impressive bucks Minnesota has ever seen. And the satisfaction rate seems to be on the rise down there. It's not to say we're without problems. But with recent changes that we've had, there seems to be a trend in turning around the problems that we've had in the past and kind of heading in the right direction. I prepared the slides here, and I'll go real quick. I'm going to skip over a whole bunch of them here just for the sake of time. Bluffton Whitetails, who it is or who we are. I did present a little timeline there on how management has followed out in the last few years. Slide 5 is in 2010 when we really had some major changes down there, and I'll read that real quick. The DNR implemented a new management strategy in Zone 3 to control deer population and protect young bucks. This was not only a change in season framework, but a historic change in the basic philosophy of how Minnesota now approaches deer management. The implementation of antler point restrictions and the banning of cross-taking of bucks was partially born by necessity to control the herd population, but also socially driven as a response to hunter and landowner requests for the protection of antler deer. With the clear majority, 69% of hunters supporting the regulation to protect the antler deer herd, the DNR acknowledged and accepted a willingness to retool the deer hunt in southeast Minnesota to better meet the wishes of the Zone 3 hunters. And what I'm going to do is just fast forward to what that's resulted in. It's unprecedented success. Last weekend, I was invited to a private deer show down in Houston where a well-known hunter down there invites all the people who have had extraordinary success, I should say, down in Zone 3 area to come to his house and show off their deer and talk about their experiences. Through his door that day, we had 7 Boone and Crockett deer. That rivals basically what our entire state produces in a year as far as high-end deer. Two other things I wanted to mention in Sunday afternoon is that 2 potential state records were down there. Both the pictures there, the Stan Krademacher buck from Altura, you might have heard about that, and then the Warren buck is the one below that. The Krademacher buck, I want to also note that that was shot on state land, something that is almost unheard of. So we really got a good population going down there. And Ted was real good about bringing the APRs, educating a little bit on the APRs and what that does. The next slide is an event I was at on the 31st of January. It was called the Best Buck Battle of the Border, and this was put on by a small church down in Winona, the Pleasant Valley Church. What they did is they had a deer show, and again, this is unprecedented. The premise of the deer show was to invite Wisconsin bucks over and Minnesota bucks, and we'll have a fun contest on who can produce the nicest deer. And you got to remember, Winona is right across the river from nationwide acknowledged and respected counties of Buffalo and Trempealeau as far as quality deer goes. For the first time probably in a long time, we've been able to do that. The next slide is just 3 slides of different bucks. Ted did a real good job on showing the different age structures of bucks. The picture on the upper left is Lydia. She's got her success. That's just a small deer. That would be off limits to most people in Zone 3. That falls within the APR guidelines of not being able to harvest. But I do want to state that kids are exempt from that. They can shoot any deer down there. The one on the far right just goes to show you how nice the herd can be, and any kids, anyone of any age, can harvest a trophy deer down there. And then the middle one is my son. I had to throw that one in there. He shot that deer this year, and he shot a nubbin buck last year, and he put his own point restriction on himself this year. He wanted to shoot a six-pointer. And I just wanted to show you that even with him putting his own point restriction on, he was easily able to achieve that goal. Now, I don't want to make this a trophy speech, and a lot of the times when we're talking antlers, people will think of that as just being about trophy. What I really want to make a point of here is the changes down in Zone 3 was a change in the basic philosophy of how we even approach deer hunting. And the best way to describe it is in a book that I read, and this book is by Dr. Bob Norton. He's a retired psychologist from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. A lot of states even use this book in their hunter safety programs, but he divides the hunters into five different distinct stages of maturity, changing with their motivations and goals when they hunt. Shooter stage is the beginner. Limiting out stage is somebody who their basic priority is to fill tags. Trophy stage, which introduces selectivity in your hunt. Method stage, you introduce a handicap for yourself maybe, and then the sportsman stage, which is something we'd all love to go. Those guys just reminisce about the hunt, never really about the kill. But what I want to do here, it maybe means nothing up front, but our state promotes the limiting out stage, the second of five stages. We seem to be stagnated on the limiting out stage, and that may be a part of the reason why we're having the problems throughout the state with population issues. If we promote the limiting out stage, basically we're telling people that success is gauged on how many or how successful, what percentage of the tags that you're filling. With a 30% success rate roughly in deer hunting, if you don't fill out all your tags, you're considered not having a successful year. My contention is we need to not necessarily move everybody out of that stage, but not discriminate against or look down on the people who have matured to the stage 3, stage 4, stage 5 areas of that. I was part of the goal setting committee down in 2014 down in the southeast, and I heard a lot, 200 probably comments about deer, and it was hard to decipher where the majority was. What do the people really want? So I ended up referring back to two surveys that were recently done by the DNR. First one was in 2013. It was for landowners, basically private lands. And the second was done in 2012, and that just surveyed the deer hunters themselves. The reason I did that is to find the biological and social satisfaction since the 2010 management changes. And biologically, I don't even want to go there. I'm not a biologist. I have to rely a lot on the DNR for that. Ms. McKinley, she was quoted in just saying, biologically, implementation of antler point restrictions worked as anticipated, as we expected. Now let's move over to the social part, which we're dealing with now.
Mr. Johnson, we're running out of time.
Okay, I'll go real quick. Sorry about that. You can just see in the graph there, in Zone 3 compared to statewide, our license sales have increased. Our overall harvest has decreased, but not nearly as much as it has in the rest of the state. Actually, as we saw today, some of our buck harvest in Zone 3 has actually gone up. It's on the positive side. And then you can see the other statistics there with support for continuing APRs and then the satisfaction with the APRs.
Mr. Johnson, we're going to have to cut you off. Do you have any final comments, and then we're going to have some questions for you.
Maybe just future challenges. It's the last slide in your presentation. Those are the issues I think we deal with in Zone 3. We deal with them everywhere. Land access, we need to get a little bit more access to land. Lack of a long-term deer management plan, which I think we've already touched on that today. There are some issues specific to Zone 3 there. Hunter recruitment and retention. Improve the communication with the hunters, between the DNR and the hunters, and then improve the deer herd monitoring, which I think Brooks talked a lot about that. Sorry it took so long.
No, that's all right. Thank you very much. Representative Cornish, question.
Real quickly, how would you ever compare this or model this up north you, by your slides admission here, at 90% private land, probably a lot of it posted. It's like Mankato when you go out towards St. Peter, there's a refuge in the right, beautiful deer, lots of them, but nobody can hunt it except those people that own it, no access. How do you take it up to Representative Fabian's or Luick's district where it's just the opposite, 90% is state, federal, and county owned?
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative, Bluff and Whitetails, we just deal with the issues in Zone 3. And as Mr. Ted implied to, I don't think that APRs are the fit for the entire state. I don't think they would work well up there. The population's not high enough. But for an area like Zone 3, they've been very effective. They've been very popular in all right. Did that answer your question, or?
I'm just not a big fan, but I was just curious about that part. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Johnson, I'm glad that it works down in Zone 3, and I'm very, very happy that everybody's happy about the way it's working down there, and that's all a good thing. And Mr. Johnson, we have one more question. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, you note there's 69% of the hunters supported that action. That's not my recollection of the survey. Where does that 69% support
Mr. Johnson.
Factor come from?
Chairman Hackbarth, Representative, that came from the 2009 survey,
Representative McNamara?
It's not my recollection. I guess I would want you to clarify and get back to the chair. My recollection was it was a three-stage ask question. Do you support it, don't you support it, or don't you have a feeling about it? And it was a minority in all three. So I guess I would ask if you could get back to us where this number's coming from. Thank you.
Chairman, I'll certainly get back to you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming in today. Great presentation. Thank you. Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, we've got 5 minutes left. I'm sure that you can wrap it up in that amount of time. We do have another group that's coming into this hearing after we adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Craig Engwall. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And I'll get right into it. MBHA urges the DNR to manage towards a harvest, annual harvest level of approximately 225,000 deer per year, by phased in by 2019. And we didn't just dream up that number. That number comes from looking at averages. The 15-year average, we saw the bar graphs before, the 15-year average annual harvest is a little over 220,000 deer. If you go back 25 years, the average annual harvest is approximately 208,000 deer. So that's right within a long-term average, and we think that is sustainable. We understand that the numbers of 290,000 are too high, and that's we're not advocating that. We also think it's feasible if weather cooperates, which is a big if, but by 2019, because as Mr. Thielander said, when we had the bad winters of 96 to 97, the harvest in 97 was approximately 150,000. 6 years later, we had 290,000. So through conservative seasons, good weather, we can do that, and we think that's a reasonable plan. It was stated that looking at an annual statewide harvest, the media and some hunters like to use that number, but one of the reasons we use that number is it's a defined, clear number that we have. It's good data, and it's really the only good data that we can look at in comparison to other things, which leads to my second point, is that we really think it's imperative that the average hunter, the average person, have easier access to data, and as Representative Russo pointed out, having data is critical. And so, again, it was stated that there are 126 different permit areas, and those are looked at individually, and that makes sense. We understand Winona's not Halleck and Worthington's not Ely. But that data is available for those 126 different areas, and if that's where the decision-making is being made, the public should have the ability to look at that and see if they agree and offer their input on how those decisions are being made. So at some point, we would like it if DNR could phase in a system where you could look at the state map of the deer permit areas, maybe click on an area, and in that you can glean the information with which they are basing their decisions on, whether it's the density, whether it's the how they run their model, et cetera. That would be tremendously helpful in furthering this discussion about what the numbers should be. And then lastly, I'd like to say that, and based on what some of the other commentators said too, that in light of this, it might be time for the state to look at issuing and considering a deer plan. We have a duck plan, we have a grouse plan, we have a pheasant plan. They're all good things, and I do all those activities, and I think it's great. And for each one, there are approximately 100,000 hunters, and we have about 500,000 deer hunters. And so with all these issues floating and the concern about deer, we believe that taking a global look at the issue would be a good thing. And with that, I'll take questions.
Any questions, members? We've got a few more minutes left before the end of the hearing. Well, Mr. Engwall, thank you for coming forward. I think those are some great suggestions, and I hope that the DNR is listening and can follow through on some of those examples. Thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
Members, with that, the hearing is adjourned.